Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
To America's Game of the Week, Cowboys and Patriots, from what will be a cold and rainy, maybe even a snowy Foxborough on Sunday. A matchup with the team with the most yards on offense in Dallas and the team that's allowed the fewest yards on defense in New England. As we sit here this morning, Patriots are a touchdown favorite. So, Nick, how did the Cowboys pull off the upset on Sunday?
Before I answer, let me be very clear. I'm explaining how they can pull off the upset. I am not picking the upset. I picked the Patriots to lose the last 2 weeks. I was right in one. I was very wrong against Philadelphia. I'm not picking the Cowboys to beat them.
But if they're going to.
And with that said, they do have a viable path. This isn't the Patriots playing the Jets a few weeks ago. This isn't a game where if the Patriots lost, you would be absolutely gobsmacked by it. I do expect them to win, but we know what the Cowboys need to do. Zeke needs to have the type of game he had a few weeks ago against Philadelphia. He needs to be getting 5 yards a clip, score a touchdown, be the engine that drives their offense, and that is not an indictment on Dak. It is in a league of matchups, even though the Cowboys have a statistical top three passing offense, the Patriots have the number one pass defense by a mile, so you have to lean on Zeke. And on the other side of the ball, Mohamed Sanu is not going to play, it would appear, and Philip Dorsett might not play. That would mean Jacoby Myers and N'Keal Harry, who I believe their combined age is almost equal to Tom Brady's actual age, those two guys and Edelman are going to be your weapons on the outside. Dare them to beat you. Play man-to-man across the board against those guys and heat up Tom Brady. Michael Bennett, Robert Quinn, DeMarcus Lawrence, go eat. That's, to me, the way the Cowboys win this football game. They slow the game down or speed it up, if you want to look at it that way, as far as keep the clock ticking by running the football and you attack Tom Brady and say, hey, if N'Keal Harry can beat us and if you have enough time to throw the ball 40 yards downfield, we'll tip our cap to you, but we don't think you can do it. You don't put the game in Dak Prescott's hands, and you don't allow the Patriots to try to get their run game, which is something they've leaned on, not to the same success last year, but they've tried to lean on offensively. You don't let them get that going. That's the Cowboys' path if they're going to pull off this upset.
Yeah, that's their path, but you know Bill Belichick is not going to let that happen. He's going to put the game on Dak Prescott's right shoulder. I mean, Dak is coming off of the best three-game stretch of any Cowboys quarterback in history, 1,100 yards passing. But, I mean, if Bill Belichick had it in a perfect world, he'd rather Dak throw for 300 yards than allow Ezekiel Elliott to go for over 125 yards on the ground, because you know number 21 can beat you. And so when you have the best secondary in the National Football League, I think it's going to come down to those Cowboys receivers being able to win in one-on-one coverage, because you know that the Patriots are going to stack the line of scrimmage. It's going to be 7 and 8 man boxes. Can your receivers win their one-on-one matchups against Stephon Gilmore and Jason McCourty and Devin McCourty? Can you win? I think that's what it'll come down to. And on the other side of this matchup with the Dallas Cowboys defense, their guys have to be able to hold up in one-on-one situations and give them enough time up front to be able to hunt Tom Brady. I think that's how the Cowboys try to neutralize that Patriots offense. Hasn't been a great Patriots offense, but the one thing you can't allow that group to do is to be able to have some balance and being able to run the football. So I look for the Dallas Cowboys to try to keep that running game for the Patriots in check, not let that offensive line with hopefully the addition of Isaiah Wynn get that ground game going. If you can make them one-dimensional, I think that gives you an opportunity for Michael Bennett and DeMarcus Lawrence to get after Tom Brady.
I know you like the Patriots in this one. Where do you stand on Tom Brady coming into it? After the couple of weeks that he's had, do you feel like we'll see a different Tom Brady come Sunday?
No. Right. Tom Brady, maybe he has a magic playoff activation button he can press. And I don't even say that sarcastically. He might. Like, Tom Brady has been so bad when pressured this year that maybe it's because this is just where he is, and maybe it's because he has made the somewhat logical decision that our defense is so good, our schedule is so soft, our path to a bye in the playoffs, even if it ends up being the 2 seed, is so fortuitous that the only way this season goes totally awry is if I get hurt. Is if I get dinged, if I come going to the playoffs not healthy. So once the playoffs get here, I'm going to stand in the pocket. I'm going to, take some hits while I release the football. But right now, he's not doing that. And he sure as hell isn't doing it. He didn't do it in a game against Baltimore that could have basically locked up the 1 seed. He ain't going to do it in a cross-conference game that if the Patriots lose, they can recover from. So no, I don't think the Patriots, the reason I think they're going to win is not because all of a sudden Tom Brady, it's like, oh, it's the stretch run. We're going to see a better version of Tom Brady. We are either going to see this version of Tom Brady, who is a right now slightly below average NFL quarterback, all year, including the postseason, or all through the regular season. One of those two. It's not going to shift, around Thanksgiving, at least to my eye. I don't think Belichick and Josh McDaniels' game plan is going to be, Tom, this is the game we need you to throw for 350. And I think that would be a faulty game plan because the Cowboys, while their defense, you can argue, has been a bit of a disappointment, one thing they have been able to do since Bennett's been there is create pressures on the quarterback. They haven't turned all those into sacks, but they've been able to get pressure on the quarterback. So no, I don't think Brady all of a sudden is going to be great this week.
No, I don't think he's going to all of a sudden flip a switch and play at an all-pro level, especially with the weapons or lack thereof that he has to work with. I mean, they're still kicking the tires on whether or not Antonio Brown might be a viable option. So clearly this offense is not going to be a juggernaut. But the one thing that Tom Brady understands is that with his defense, he doesn't have to take a whole lot of chances. The worst thing that he can do is turn the football over and give the Dallas Cowboys offense field position and extra possession. So I think if you starve that Cowboys offense and you force them to drive the length of the field, going up against that Pats defense, that's going to be really hard to do.
And Jenna, what have we talked about that has bedeviled the Cowboys all year long early in games? They're awful starts, right?
Sometimes you ask and I'm supposed to answer. Sometimes I don't know if it's rhetorical. I got nervous.
Well, that felt like a rhetorical right there.
It did. Okay.
Transparency just for a moment. Yeah. I was going to have you answer, but I realized I didn't set it up well enough that I wasn't certain if you were going to say what I wanted you to say, so I answered for you. It's the slow starts.
Welcome in, audience.
It's the slow starts. It's the 3 points in the first half against New Orleans. It's down 31-3 to Green Bay. It's down 14-0 to Minnesota. Down 7-0 to hell.
In the first quarter
to Detroit. I wasn't even going to include that. That's a great point. You cannot fall down to the Patriots. The number that Dusty found for us earlier this week that is of all the Patriot crazy stats, and they have some great ones. They've been to a conference championship game every year this decade. That's pretty good. They've had a bye every year this decade. That's
not
pretty
bad.
Good. But the fact that the New England Patriots, since Brady's taken over as quarterback, 105 times, they have been at home and had a lead at the half, and they are 104-1. Is one of the craziest stats, not a 10-point lead at half.
That's crazy.
Not their, you know what I mean? Not they win the turnover. That's the type of number, if you win the turnover battle in the NFL by 4, you're supposed to be like 104-1. Mm-hmm. It's been 20 years of teams going to Gillette or even whatever the previous stadium was called, and if you are losing at halftime, you have lost the game. It's over. And so for the Cowboys, it's one thing, no team is built to come back from 14 points, I get it, but you can't come back from 3 points down in that building against this team for 20 years. And so a fast start for the Cowboys might be the biggest key to this game if they're going to have any chance of pulling off the upset.
And if everything is equal, where's the one advantage that the Patriots have far and away over the Cowboys? Rhetorical. Bill Belichick. The coaching advantage is definitely going to go the way.
Long day at work? Tough day at school? Still stuck at the office? Treat yourself to the meal you deserve on demand from your favorite restaurant. Restaurants come to you with DoorDash. DoorDash connects you to all your favorite restaurants in your city. Ordering is easy. Just use the DoorDash app and choose what you want to eat, and your Dasher will bring it to you, wherever you are. Not only is that burger place you love on DoorDash already, but over 310,000 other amazing restaurants are too. DoorDash connects you with door-to-door delivery in over 3,300 cities and all 50 states across the United States and Canada. Order from your local go-tos or choose from your favorite chains like Chipotle, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, and the Cheesecake Factory. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code FTF. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code FTF. Again, that's promo code FTF for $5 off your first order from DoorDash. Back to the show.
All right, and on Sunday, 1 p.m. on Fox, Carson Wentz and the Eagles hosting Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. Big game for Philly if they want to keep pace with those Dallas Cowboys in the NFC East. Nick, who wins this NFC showdown? Seahawks or Eagles?
No, this one. The problem for this one is it seems to me so obvious, and it seems like all the indicators. Seattle coming off a bye. Seattle historically against Philadelphia. Seattle this time of year. Seattle is the healthier team. Seattle's the team that's playing. And then I look at the point spread and I see, wait, Seattle's getting a point and a half? It's the type of thing where it's like, what am I not understanding here? Oh, yeah, by the way, the most important as far as wins, losses, Philadelphia Eagle over the last three seasons. Not the quarterback, so I'm winning a Super Bowl without their quarterback. They've interchanged a lot of parts. Lane Johnson, he might not be playing in this football game. We have seen Carson Wentz be one guy with his all-pro right tackle and one guy without him. So I still am going to go, even though maybe I'm being tricked here, I'm still going to go with Seattle. I think Seattle has been the clearly better team throughout the year. I think Seattle is a team that actually can win. I don't think they will, but can win the Super Bowl. They also know they have the opportunity for the first time all year to be in first place in their division after Sunday evening. Mm-hmm. If San Francisco loses, Seattle wins, all of a sudden it's like, wow, it went that quick from the Niners being the last, one of the last undefeated teams in football to wait. We're the five seed right now. And so I like Seattle. I also like that what Seattle has been building towards throughout the year as far as starting to fully unleash Russell Wilson the way I wished they would have in the playoff game last year against Dallas. That playoff game could have been gone a different way. Philadelphia, meanwhile, to me, Canty, still seems like a team that is searching for who it is and what it does best. So for all those reasons, even though there's a West Coast team going east, you know, for an early kick, I still like the Seattle Seahawks.
Well, here's the problem with the Philadelphia Eagles. They don't really have an explosive skill position player. I mean, you have so many guys out of the lineup. DeSean Jackson is out for the season. Miles Sanders has been dealing with some nicks and bruises here. Jordan Howard was out last week. Yep. Alshon Jeffrey was out last week. So those guys, they're practicing on a limited basis. I don't know to what capacity they're going to be effective in Sunday's matchup. But in looking at this Seattle Seahawks team, the fact that they are traveling west to east, that does give me a little bit of concern. The fact that Jadeveon Clowney is dealing with something, Tyler Lockett is dealing with something. Those are key pieces on that team. And so I believe in Russell Wilson and his ability to have late game magic. If we're talking about a one possession game, which I'd probably be led to believe since both teams have struggled on the offensive side of the ball. But I look at this Seattle Seahawks team and it feels like the kind of game where they could have a letdown, especially after the big win that they had going into the bye week. And then of course, understanding where the Philadelphia Eagles are at as well. The Philadelphia Eagles are one of those teams that's just maddening because every time you get ready to discount them, they come up with a big win, whether it was earlier in the season against Green Bay or it was against the Buffalo Bills. Just when you're ready to say that they're not in the playoff picture, they come up with a big win. So it'd be interesting to see how this game plays out. I want to say the Seahawks get the win, but I don't know. This Philly team still feels like it's dangerous because they're desperate.
Oh, surprising answer from both of you. But all the reasons you gave why Seattle should win are probably the reasons why the Packers should have beaten the Eagles when they played at Lambeau. Mm-hmm. Eagles somehow, some way put together a fantastic game plan and won that game. I'm just wondering who you think of these two is the more talented team.
Oh, I don't. At the beginning of the year, I would have said Philadelphia, but at this point, it's Seattle. Like the
really?
Yes, because I don't define talent. Like, is it your Madden rating, or is it how well you actually play?
We talk about how much Russell Wilson does without a very talented team at every position.
Yeah, but he's one of the guys on the team.
Sure.
And so, like, his talent is so far outweighs what anybody on either side of the ball has. And also, I would add this. I think Philadelphia, this offseason, if it's a long offseason, which even if they win the division, I think it's going to be, because this season, barring a miraculous turnaround, is going to be a disappointment from where preseason expectations were. They could take a page out of Russell Wilson's book as far as how to make it happen with mediocre wide receivers. Now, I know Tyler Lockett's numbers the last 2 years have been absolutely sensational. So much of that is because of Russell Wilson. DK Metcalf fell to the second round in the draft despite those eye-popping combine photos because he right now is very limited in what he can do as a wide receiver. Will Disley, who was really popping onto the scene the first month of the year, popped his Achilles, and now they are on their second and third tight ends. And Russell Wilson still finds a way to make things happen. There are no excuses of, oh, we don't have enough receiving talent. Russell would love to have a Zach Ertz. He ain't got no Zach Ertz. Carson Wentz has had that. I know everyone's like, oh, he doesn't have DeSean Jackson. When's the last time Russell Wilson had a DeSean Jackson?
When was the last time Carson Wentz had a DeSean Jackson?
Well, no, I understand, but Russell Wilson's going to win or either first or second in league MVP despite having limited weapons. Carson Wentz, we say, Nelson Aguilar dropped the pass, and they're dealing with these injuries. And some of that is, and a big part of the reason Philadelphia was the preseason pick a lot of us had them as, is at least being a top two seed in the NFC, was, well, they're going to have near MVP level play from their quarterback. Kenny, they've gotten nothing close to that so far this year. And that, as much as the injuries, is a huge factor as to why they are where they are.
Yeah, they're not getting the production that they thought they would when they gave Carson Wentz that contract extension. But, I mean, in looking at the comparison between the two quarterbacks, I think it's a little unfair just because Russell Wilson's at a different phase in his career than Carson Wentz is. And you would think, based on the experience that he's had, he'll have more of an edge in terms of being a force multiplier with limited weapons. I think if Carson Wentz, if we're talking about him being healthy enough to be able to be the starting quarterback for the Eagles as long as Russ has been with the Seahawks, then maybe you're talking about a quarterback that's capable of doing more with the current group of skill position players that he has.
Back here, first things first, we're now joined by 10-year NBA vet Ryan Hollins. Hey, Ryan.
What up, man?
Good to see you.
Let's go.
I'm no longer the tallest person on set.
No, you are not.
Ryan Hollins becomes the second tallest guest we've ever had behind only David Robinson.
What about
David Robinson?
Shaq
might not be a footer now.
He's not taller.
Oh, Shaq. You're right. Yeah, Shaq. Shaq. My bad, Jenna. I forgot about Shaq.
How tall are you?
I'm 7 feet, man.
Legit. Adam's like 7'1", man. I'm telling you.
Admiral 7'1"?
Yeah, man.
I thought he was like 6'10".
It's funny that NBA players always have a little.
Yeah, he's 7 feet.
That's throws on a few inches or take off a few inches.
Good to see you, man.
The NBA is putting their best foot forward tonight with the much-anticipated matchup of the Rockets and Clippers. Russ and Harden against Paul George and maybe even Kawhi Leonard, if we're lucky. Rockets in third place out west, Clippers right behind him. And while it is still early, we could learn a lot after tonight. Ryan, let's start with you. Which of these teams has a better chance of winning the West? Clippers or Rockets?
This is by far the Clippers. I thought this was like a trick question. Was this like, where were the Lakers involved in this? And I know you're fired up. Ultimately, I know the Rockets won their first matchup. And I know that, the Clippers were a little off. But ultimately, this Clippers team is still built for success. You're not seeing the best basketball from the Clippers so far. And there's three reasons why you have to believe in the Clippers as far as a championship contender. One, they're versatile. They can guard multiple defenders. Kawhi, Paul George, Harkless. There's a number of guys who
Patrick
can go.
Beverly.
Patrick Beverly. We can go down the list. Second, they can close out basketball games. Chris, you know it. At the biggest stages in the playoffs, it's one with star power. Paul George can go out and get you a big shot. We don't need to question Kawhi Leonard, and Lou Williams will hit a big one, and Patrick Beverly will make the shots after shot when needed. Now, let's look at the Rockets. I like the Rockets. I appreciate their duo, but they're a bit of a wild card if we're talking about contenders, because you got to question Russell Westbrook, my little brother, his outside shooting. Clint Capella, when they start switching things later in the playoffs, how effective is he going to be? And guys like P.J. Tucker who can play, but is P.J. Tucker going to hit enough shots to beat you? So if we're talking about actually coming out of the Western Conference, I don't give that to the Rockets quite yet, Nick.
So here's why I actually, it's not a trick question, why I totally disagree with you, is these two teams are actually much more similar than people give them credit for. They are both teams that have an outstanding top five. Now, it's not always their starting five, like Lou Williams comes off the bench. Mm-hmm. But the Clippers' top five of Paul George, Kawhi, Trez Harrell, Lou Williams, Patrick Beverley, that'll be their closing five. That is an outstanding top five. The Rockets' top five of Russ, Harden, Eric Gordon, when he gets back, he just had knee surgery, so you have to understand with the Rockets, whatever they've been, Eric Gordon before the year clearly had the knee injury, was playing terribly, had the knee surgery, and we haven't seen him at full strength this season. PJ Tucker, who is the number one corner three-point shooter over the NBA in the last 3 years, including this season. And then Clint Capella, who happens to be playing the best basketball of his life, five straight 20-rebound games. And after those five, yeah, a lot of question marks. I know the Clippers got some good names in Harkless and Landry Shamet and Patrick Patterson, but up to this point, those guys have not produced. Up to this point, all those guys are struggling this season. Jamichael Green, also add him to that list. So 5v5, it's very close. But here's what I know.
How about playoff 5v5?
Yeah,
you're talking regular season 5v5.
Absolutely. In playoff 5v5. So Paul George, as great as he was last regular season, the last few playoffs, his play has fallen off. Similar, by the way, to Russell Westbrook's. So then it's Harden versus...
What system they playing?
Well, in OKC is your point.
Freelance, wide open, no discipline.
But the problem is with the Clippers is, it is two. The problem with the Clippers is twofold. One is, it is projection entirely, because we've never seen them play together. And the other one is, we know, for good or for bad, James Harden is going to be there in the postseason. We have no idea what's going on with Kawhi Leonard. Are you confident Kawhi is going to play tonight? Because I'm not. He played one game in a week, and he was out of gas by the fourth quarter. He played last Wednesday against the Rockets. They lost. You're right. One game does not make a season. Let's pretend that didn't even happen. And then this past Wednesday night in the great game against Boston, he played 22 minutes in the first three quarters after not playing a week of basketball and was out of gas by the fourth quarter in overtime. What is going on with Kawhi Leonard is the biggest question in the NBA right now. And to say that he's going to be fine come the playoffs, I have no evidence of that, Cam.
Well, he might not be fine come the playoffs, but I mean, as long as he's going to be available for him, they're still going to be a contending team. I mean, we saw it last year. He was dealing with something in the playoffs, but there was no better individual player throughout the entire playoffs last year than Kawhi Leonard. You saw the difference that he was able to make hitting that shot over Joel Embiid to help his team advance to the next series. But I mean, in looking at his imprint on this Clippers team, you saw it in the Wednesday night game against the Boston Celtics. He has the dunk where he's literally hanging on the rim, and then he blocks Kemba Walker's last second three-point attempt. So Kawhi has shown that even with whatever he's dealing with, he can still have an impact on the game. Now, Wednesday also happened to be the first time that we saw him and Paul George on the court for the first time. And you just have to think that throughout the course of this season, this team will develop their chemistry on the defensive end. And for me, if you're trying to come out of the Western Conference, that's where it has to start. When you look at what LeBron and AD are doing with the Lakers, it's the best defensive team in the league. I mean, in order to be able to compete with those guys, you are going to have to be able to stop somebody. That's why I'm hesitant to say that the Rockets really have a shot at being able to be the team to come out of this Western Conference, just because the Clippers, and I know it's projection, but the Clippers, because of their versatility on the defensive side, and the Lakers have a better shot because they can stop people from scoring.
Nick, I'd be lying to you if I told you I wasn't concerned with Kawhi's knee, but what makes me feel confident is that Kawhi gets to that stage in an athlete's career where you know your body. You know, if I give it 110% before a back-to-back, I'm not going to be too good to you later on. He knows he's got to manage his way through the season. He's already come in, Chris, with a plan of, hey, I'm going to load manage. Who cares what anybody else thinks? Now, ultimately, when he's played, I agree, he hasn't been that impressive, but I want to see Kawhi late in June. I want to see him in the playoffs. I'm not necessarily looking to see Kawhi Leonard now. Now, as far as matching up in the playoffs, you brought up Eric Gordon. If Eric Gordon is playing a small forward position for you against a large, dynamic, sizable Clippers team, that's going to be a problem.
So let me address both those points quickly. One is about as long as he performs in May and June, then the regular season won't matter. And I think that's mostly correct. The problem for the Clippers is going into the year, we knew there were five outstanding teams in the Western Conference. The Lakers, the Clippers, the Nuggets, who were the two seed last year, the Houston Rockets, who add Russ in place of Chris Paul, and the Jazz, who might have had the best offseason of anyone, not including the teams that added superstars.
Yeah.
Adding Conley, adding Boyan, adding
Jeff Green.
Right. And so their starting five, even though Conley didn't play well to start the year, is out. One of those teams is done after the first round. So the importance of getting a top three seed going into the year, I thought was incredibly high. I'm now going to say the importance of getting a top two seed, because that six seed's going to be the Dallas Mavericks. And the Dallas Mavericks are not going to beat whoever the three seed is, but they might have the best player on the court come the playoffs in Luka Doncic. So are the Clippers, by the time they get to the Lakers or the Rockets in the playoffs, if they get there, having probably started the playoffs on the road, if Kawhi's going to play 60-some games, are they going to have expended too much? And the other point is this, because I think the biggest reason people would like the Clippers over the Rockets is, well, Kawhi Leonard in the playoffs versus James Harden in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi won Finals MVP last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's him against the Golden State Warriors. Now, it was a lesser version of the Golden State Warriors with the Warriors. That's a hell of a line. The guy on the right is better in everything but rebounds, right? Better shooting percentage even, more points, more assists. Who's the guy on the right? That's in the playoffs against the full-strength Golden State Warriors. So much of narratives, full strength for until late in game five when KD goes down. So much of the narrative is based on who won, not necessarily based on how well guys produced. People look at what Kawhi did in the finals as heroic and that James Harden choked again. James Harden was objectively better against a tougher Warriors team in round two than Kawhi was in the NBA finals, and we throw it out because the Rockets lost again. That, to me, is not necessarily a fair indicator of who's going to be better come this
postseason. Real quick, here's the difference. Kawhi Leonard is going to give you that in a game seven with a game winner. He's going to close that bad boy out, okay? James Harden, we haven't seen it yet. I'm a big James guy. If we want to talk about who's the best player in the NBA right now, I would say arguably is James Harden the last 13 games, averaging about 40 points a game. I wouldn't question that. But we're talking playoffs, Chris? I'm going Kawhi Leonard. It's star power. And if there's a team that I would have to worry about or try to, you know, shake, I would worry about Harden, okay, because of star player in the playoffs. That's a team you wouldn't want to match up with. But I'm not scared about Utah, Denver, Nuggets, whoever.
Yeah, Harden can score at will. I mean, nobody's taking that away from him. I mean, in terms of being able to score the basketball, he might be the best in the NBA right now. But in terms of a player having that clutch factor and a guy that you trust, I'm going to go with the guy that already has two finals MVPs with two different
teams. Talk to him. Come on, Chris.
I'm going to go with the guy who I know is actually going to play. And once I know Kawhi's going to play, listen, he's played five games in the month of November. He's shooting 35% this month with as much rest as anyone could have.
Wait, you're questioning playing in the playoffs or regular season?
I'm questioning what his health is going to be for the rest of his career. That's right now what is in question to me. And I think we have underrated how good that Raptors depth was last year. And we're seeing it with how good they've been throughout this regular season.
That's true.
Fair. All right. Sunday night football now. You got a big one here. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers in the Bay to face Jimmy G and the 49ers. According to Fox Bet, the Niners are 3-point underdogs in this one. Nick, who wins this game?
Green Bay wins it for a number of reasons. Number one, I'll just say, is health. Like, I don't know who's going to play for San Francisco. Green Bay, aside from the Davante Adams injury, which they were able to withstand, they've been one of the healthier, really good teams throughout this season. San Francisco, all of a sudden, I mean, listed on the injury report that we don't know who's playing, Emmanuel Sanders, Debo Samuel, George Kittle, Dee Ford, Matt Breida, even their kicker. Robbie Gould hasn't practiced yet this week. You are talking about key components, almost all of which on offense, aside from Dee Ford, for a team that already, to me, struggles offensively. Additionally, San Francisco the last 3 weeks, starting to look a little leaky. They were dominating Arizona 3 weeks ago. Arizona makes a charge late in the game to cut that to 3. San Francisco escapes. They play Seattle. Seattle had that game won to me multiple times. San Francisco could have taken a tie. Foolishly doesn't. They lose that game. And then last week they play Arizona again. And Arizona beat them for 59 and a half minutes. San Francisco got a very beneficial spot, which would have put them in a position to kick a game-tying field goal. Instead, they get a first down, score a touchdown the next play to save that game. Green Bay, on the other hand, is coming off a bye. After they had the bad loss in week 9 of the season, they turned things back around with the good win in week 10, and they've got to be saying to themselves, man, it's been a long time since the playoffs went through Lambeau Field. It's been a long time since we didn't have to win 3 games to get to the Super Bowl, only had to win 2. With a win this week, they are in brilliant position to get a bye for all those reasons. And, you know, gun to my head, Aaron Rodgers, Jimmy Garoppolo, I'll always go Aaron Rodgers, even though I know there's a lot of other aspects to it. For all those reasons, I like Green Bay.
Yeah, and you go back to that week 9 loss that they had against the Chargers, and Aaron Rodgers came out after the game and said he had some issues with the team's travel schedule and getting in late. I mean, coming off of a bye week, you would think going back out to the West Coast, they would have that on the agenda in terms of making sure that all of those different issues were buttoned up and that the team, from a mental standpoint, is ready to go with their best performance of the season. But, I mean, it's all out there in front of them for the Green Bay Packers. I think this matchup sets up well for them. The one thing that this team has to do is that they have to force this game to be won by Jimmy Garoppolo for the 49ers. Yep. They can't allow the 49ers' offensive line and their running game to be the difference. They can't allow them to control the time of possession, eat up the clock, and dictate the complexion of the game. I think that defense's challenge is being able to stop the run with their front seven and then force Jimmy Garoppolo to make plays in the passing game down the field. That's the one question mark that we've had for the San Francisco 49ers this entire season. That's why a lot of people, including you and me, are still skeptical of the 49ers as we inch closer to the postseason. We just don't know what to expect from their quarterback. So to me, if you're the Green Bay Packers, this game is going to hinge on your defense's ability to be able to force Jimmy Garoppolo to beat him. You saw last week that he made the two mistakes in the red zone. He's going to throw the ball to the opposing team. You know that they have the personnel in the secondary to take advantage of it. It's just a matter of making sure the game comes down to that.
We're heading into week 12. The 49ers have one of the best records in the league, if not the
best
record.
Tied with the Patriots.
And yet the jury's almost still out on the 49ers. So this is going to be a tough stretch for him. They got the Packers. They're at Baltimore, and then they're at New Orleans. Mm-hmm. So if you want to know who the San Francisco 49ers are, I feel like the next 3 to 4 weeks are going to really give you a good sense. We know who the Packers are.
They have 6 games remaining, obviously. 4 of them are as difficult as it could be. Green Bay, at Baltimore, at New Orleans, and then the final week of the year at Seattle, a team that already beat them. So I have been skeptical of San Francisco. I think that skepticism is going to prove itself out well-founded over the next month. On the flip side for Green Bay, a loss in this game to me would be particularly devastating for them. Even though they're 8-2, they'd still be tied for the divisional lead, even assuming that, Minnesota's on a bye, so they would be tied for divisional lead even with the win. Because they have, if we're being honest, underachieved in the decade of Aaron Rodgers. This number is baffling to me, but I promise it's true. Since Aaron Rodgers has been the quarterback, the Green Bay Packers and the San Francisco 49ers, the 49ers who win that stretch, have gone through a half dozen quarterbacks, nearly as many coaches. They had one good stretch of football. Since Rodgers has been the quarterback, they have the same number of first-round byes, they have the same number of conference championship game appearances and the same number of Super Bowl appearances. Now, Green Bay obviously won theirs, San Francisco lost theirs, but it is remarkable that the Niners, who have been in flux seemingly up and down this decade with one period of success under Harbaugh, and the Packers, who have had this whole decade the most talented quarterback arguably ever, that come the postseason and postseason success, it's remarkably similar. If the Packers win this game, they position themselves really well to at least, you know, move into a lead on San Francisco in that regard. If they lose this game, the Niners are the team that once again is looking like they're going to have the bye, while Green Bay is going to be fighting with Minnesota just to win their division.
No, you're absolutely right, but I think the organization underachieving with Aaron Rodgers is why a couple of years ago they moved away from Ted Thompson and went with Brian Gutekunst, the new general manager, and now they have a new head coach in Matt LaFleur, and they're trying to make it work with him. But I mean, in terms of what this team can be, I don't think we're seeing the best version of the Green Bay Packers. I don't think we've seen it yet, and so there's something to be said for trying to play your best football as you go down the final stretch of the season. I'm looking for the Packers coming off of that bye week to start a run here with the San Francisco 49ers being the first team on deck.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.